Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Fair Chase podcast. Got Jared here today. Hello, Jared.
Hey, guys.
Now, we wanted to take a few minutes before we jump in with a podcast to talk turkey. And so, everybody, I don't know if you remember, a couple years ago, Jared was the national runner-up turkey caller. So he kind of fancies himself the expert in turkey calling. He's going to put on a clinic.
Not happening. My turkey skills.
You're not bad.
They're rusty. I haven't used them in over a year, man. Actually, we never even got to go out turkey hunting last year. We're Alaska bear hunting, and we came right back home. And I
pretty much. Did you not turkey hunt at all?
Not once. Nope.
Oof. Brutal.
Yeah,
I went, and I remember I met up with you while you were on a family camping trip because it was by where I was turkey hunting.
Oh yeah. Oh, like Memorial Day though, so that's towards the end of the season even.
Yeah, that was the only time I had. But hey, before we jump in, I wanted to remind everybody listening about a sweepstakes we're doing with Worldwide Trophy Adventures, WTA. If you remember, a couple months ago, I was on a British Columbia moose hunt and shot a really nice Canadian moose, had a great time, filmed it. Film was awesome. Go check that out. But what we wanted to do is partner with WTA to give away that hunt. And so if you go to the link in our bio, you can spend $35. You get 10 entries, and you get entered to win a hunt that's a $36,000 value, and you get a Gunworks rifle, a scope, a Gunworks shooting course, a bunch of stuff, everything you need to be successful on that hunt. So go check it out. The link is in our bio. We'll be posting it about it a ton on Instagram and social media as well. So with that being said, Jared, yeah, we normally do turkey camp every year. We got one coming up, you and I, which I'm pretty excited about. It looks like we're camping. We camped, and the last couple of years we were in a cabin, and now I think we're back in the woods.
Yeah, I mean, that's how we usually like to go turkey hunting. I mean, it's a luxury for us to stay somewhere with a roof over our heads and constant heat and pillows and blankets, but we like roughing it out there camping for turkey hunting. We went in the national forest,
yeah,
back during COVID, because the state had actually shut down, the state campgrounds? How did that work again?
They shut down camping in state, yeah, on state ground. And so normally we camp in the state land area, and instead we hunted there, but we had to like stay down the road like 20 minutes away and then go 20 minutes to where we were hunting, even though we could have hunted right where we were sitting too.
We wanted to play it safe, but yeah, generally we like to go out camping. Just because it sets just a different tone and kind of reminds us of deer camp a little bit. So we got that to look forward to. I think we get our draw results here pretty soon.
Yeah, pretty soon. I cannot wait, man. We should get ours, what we're aiming to get. Usually we go pretty early here in Michigan.
Yep.
I just did a pack dump, and like part of it was like, oh, here's the puffy coat I bring. Here's the, like the heavier grid fleece. Because like some of those early turkey hunts are like the coldest, colder hunts that I go on. I feel like I freeze my butt off in some turkey hunts early on.
Well, yeah, it's definitely snowed on us a couple of times. And then it's like we're freezing our butts off when we get back to camp and quick eat some breakfast, and the sun pops out and we're like, oh crap, we got to get back out now, because those turkeys are generally doing something different around that time. So it's kind of a bum rush and all hands on deck the whole day, which is really exciting and a lot of fun to do.
I have a spot that I'm pretty sure is like money, like it will produce like first morning. But my fear, the thing that I'm worried about is like what I like is like spending the day running and like chasing them and stuff, and like to go set up on a spot where I know they're going to be. It's like I'm kind of conflicted. But I, now that we're bringing Isaac from Kafaru along, I figure we just set him there and yeah, try to see if we can get him a turkey that way.
No, that should work. I mean, turkeys are generally going to be in the same area. That, I mean, if you put them to bed the night before, they're generally going to not going to move too much farther than where they are. So that's the fun thing about turkey hunt, is you can actually find them the day before and get super pumped and go back into that area and try to put a stalk on them.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about that. So what I wanted to do, and I said this at the beginning of the podcast, you are nationally recognized as a turkey caller. Stop. I mean, so I want to run you through like a few scenarios and just like have you actually make the call. You know, we're taking just a few minutes before the main podcast part of the podcast, and I just want to say, like, all right, I'm going to give you a scenario, and here's what I want you to do. Like, tell me what you're thinking, and then give me the call sequence. Can you do that?
Oh, I can, but I also want to give a disclaimer that I lost to a guy in a costume, a leopard costume.
He was Tiger King.
He was the Tiger King, and I lost to him. And he was doing everything through his mouth, no diaphragm, no slate call. So I lost to him, which probably says a whole lot about my calling.
Yeah, well, you know, we're about to find out. So you warmed up. You're actually using a rental call even today. Could yours broke or something?
Yeah, I didn't take very good care of my diaphragms throughout the past year because I haven't used it now. Probably in 2 years coming. So, like, if you don't take care of the reeds on there, they just stick together. And believe it or not, they grow mold in between it. So I pitched them.
Who's
so
it?
I'm probably sending some new ones. Yours.
Yeah.
And I don't like it. I've rinsed it heavily.
So, okay. So all right. I'm going to run you through four scenarios. Okay.
Okay. All right.
First one, you night before you put turkeys to bed, but you are only able to figure out, you know, within a few hundred yards where they are. So you know you can get within a few hundred yards of roosted turkeys. It's before a light. You know, you hear them gobble. All of a sudden, the light is just kind of peeking up, and you're kind of hearing them. You know, they're not flying down yet, but they're messing around up there. You know, all that noise and stuff. Like, what are you doing at that point? Are you calling yet?
OnX is the title sponsor of our podcast here at the Fair Chase, and it's a must-have app for all of us who love to explore the outdoors. Whether you're hunting or hiking or fly fishing, OnX gives you detailed, accurate maps right at your fingertips. With property boundaries, topographical features, and trail data, you'll always know where you are and where you're headed. You'll also likely be able to figure out where that big buck is headed to. Plus, their offline maps mean you're covered even in the most remote locations. OnX is the ultimate tool for outdoor navigation, making every adventure safer and more enjoyable. Download OnX today and explore with confidence.
If I know where they are, like if I have a general idea, maybe on the ridge that they are, and they're all flocked up on those branches, I'm trying to sneak in there as quietly as possible and not make a whole lot of noise. When turkeys wake up and kind of start stirring a little bit, they don't make a whole lot of noise. The toms will. They'll respond to other toms gobbling off in the distance, or if they hear an owl hoot early in the morning, I'm more or less trying to get it like a shot gobble. You know, I'll slam the door closed or do something along like that. But if I'm...
Do you do an owl?
I'll do an owl. Yeah, I'll do the old who cucks for you. Or you do like a screech owl, just the high, and just something to shock them into gobbling, just to find out, just to pinpoint just a little bit closer on where they are. But if it's something, you know, if I want to try to mimic a hen who's just waking up, it's a very quiet kind of clucking, almost like you put in your shirt and you're muffling it, kind of like a...
All right, give us one.
Kind of like a... Just real low and quiet, just like a hen kind of waking up. And usually, if a tom hears it, he'll bark back.
Okay. All right. So, good. Now, you hear the beautiful sound that is the wing beats. You know, you can hear them coming down, crashing down. Yep. They land. What are you doing now?
So, once turkeys fly down, obviously, they sometimes fly in all different directions or kind of off in the same direction. But if I'm mimicking kind of like a lone hen, I want to make sure that tom knows where I am, right? So if he's already flown down and maybe he expects me to be up in the tree, or if there's another hen somewhere out there, I'm going to do like a fly down cackle, and that's just going to be a... You know, I'll maybe flap my hat to sound like a wing also, and if he responds to that, then I know that he knows that I'm there. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Like, so you've located each other.
Exactly. So he knows I'm over here, and I know that he's over there. And after that, I mean, if there's multiple turkeys, like if there's hens with him, I'm going to try to pull him away, but it's going to be a little tough to try to pull him away. Sometimes toms will, but at that point, I know that there's a marker there. He's marked that area. He knows that there's a hen over there. Yeah. And I'm just going to be quiet for a little while.
Okay, so that's actually great. Next question. Okay, so they fly down, and you know you're always trying to get in their bubble, and then when you're in the bubble, you're hoping they fly down towards you, but sometimes they fly down and they go away from you, right? So say you they flew down and it's starting to move away. Like, what's your go-to call to get them to at least like stop or turn around?
if he's responding to a Yelp call, again, a Yelp call is just a locator. The hens will do
it. Give us Yelp.
Sequences of... And if he doesn't respond to that, I'll try to fire him up a little more with a little cut, just kind of like a big excitement, you know, of a hen trying to get all excited and saying, hey, I'm here. If he responds to that, I know, again, he knows that I'm here. But if I don't hear him coming closer, I know that he's with hens right now, and I'm just going to let him kind of go do his thing, let the hens kind of mosey around if they've got a feed or whatever, because generally around like 11 o'clock to 1, those hens are going to go back to nests if they have them, and that's when we can jump on alone time, when we can change up our strategy a little bit.
Perfect. Okay, so opposite happens. They start coming in, and they're working their way in. And what's your call then? Like, how are you kind of just coaxing him in that final, like, you know, to that 50 yards and end point, you know, when they maybe see the decoy and they kind of hang up right out of range.
To be honest, I'm not going to call. I'm going to play that tough long game in that silent, you know, that come and get me if you really want it. Cause
you just shut up when they're close.
Yep, I'm shutting up, and if he really wants to come dance, then he's going to come in. He already knows that I'm there, and if he keeps gobbling and doesn't hear me, he's going to try to go closer. I mean, I would hope he's going to come in, but since he's already responded to one of my calls, I don't really need to call again.
Yeah, and if he heads away, just aim high, play the wind, you know.
Exactly. I hope you hit something.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to jump into the main podcast. Like I said, wanted to take a minute to talk turkeys and just pick Jared's brain on different calls. We get a lot of questions about that. So as you go out, try these things out. Let us know if you have questions. Let us know what you're learning out there. It's always fun to see what you guys do. So appreciate you joining in, and we will talk to you guys again soon.
This episode is also brought to you by 2O Gear, innovators in technical hunting clothing. 2O is a newer company. It's based right here in Michigan, and whether you're hunting elk in the mountains or chasing antelope in the plains or traipsing through swamps after that ruddy buck, 2O has you covered with premium jackets and pants, merino wool layers, everything you could possibly need to stay comfortable in the woods. Their products are engineered for functionality and durability, ensuring you stay protected in any conditions. Plus, their camo is really effective. We're big fans. So don't take our word for it, though. Go to 2ogear.com and check it out.
Todd, thanks for taking the time today.
Of course. I'm always happy to be here, man.
I've not done my human predator pack mule workout for the day yet.
But you plan to.
Yeah.
Plan to. Okay. Do you get to? Are you going into the gym today, or you got to do it at home?
Today, I'm doing it from home, but I've switched them around lately because I can get to the gym like Wednesdays and Thursdays, and there's like two kind of gym days in the program. Yeah. So I like put those back to back, which is probably not ideal, but, you know, it's what I can do.
It's better than not doing it at all. That's for damn sure. So
yeah, I've been doing it for a while. I feel I've never been this flexible and strong combined.
That's what we want. Yeah. That's longevity right there, my friend.
Yeah, it feels good. It's like historically I'm very inflexible, something I've struggled, like especially my hamstrings and hips. And that's just caused all sorts of problems in my feet, you know, my back and stuff. So the warm-ups, which I generally in, you know, sports growing up, I kind of just screw around or skip. Like I spend extra time. I think once you like peak 35, you got to start spending even more time.
I was going to say, well, yeah, I mean, we're definitely at the age where you can't like just ignore it. You got to do it now. You
know? Yeah.
Yeah. Because there are consequences. If you do.
They're very real. And they last for a lot longer than they used to.
Absolutely.
No, it's like I'm working out the other day, and it's like, I'm realizing, you know, I was doing deadlifts, and on the way up, the inside of my, just a little spot in the inside of my knee, just hurting. And it started feeling kind of funny. I was like, all right, I'm just going to call it on this. And I'm moving somewhere else. It just felt like a weird pain. And, you know, now it's better and I can work out again. And historically, I'd have been like, oh, push through the pain. You know, you'll be fine. And then I'm like dealing with it for a couple months, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, don't do that. Well, that's interesting. We'll have to talk about that offline and see what's going on.
Oh, great. Probably didn't do something right.
No, you're probably just fine.
So I've got Todd Baumgartner on here. So we've had him on the show before. And, you know, you are kind of my go-to guy for, you know, training for hunting season. So past couple of years, been kind of following you and, you know, as of the last, I don't know how many months ago, started human predator pack mule training and have been loving it. But, you know, what I wanted to do today is, you know, we past week, the last week episode was all on kind of getting ready for bear hunting. So, you know, scouting and finding spots, everything else. And this episode, you know, we're kind of the back end of this turkey season, which is not so physical, but it can be. But I want to spend time today just talking about, you know, for people who are trying to get ready for bear season. You know, it's March now. We've got, you know, maybe end of April, maybe most likely May and June, people are going to be up in the mountains. So, like, you know, as you think about getting people ready for a couple months out from hitting the mountains, what are some things, you know, just things that you'd recommend them take a look at? So that's why I wanted to have you on here.
Yeah, man. Well, I think for the first thing is you have to look at what you've done up to now, right? So let's say that you have a bear hunt. It's middle March already now.
Yeah.
And let's say you're going end of April. So you're looking at like 6 weeks. Well, if you haven't really done any training, that much training up to now, it's still not a good idea to jump into the deep end of the pool and just start doing really intense stuff, because it's going to be tough for you to be consistent. And you also need some underlying foundation to be able to get the most out of that. So if you're in that camp, you still have to do a lot of the low and slow aerobic training. And I think one of the best things that people can do is just at least one long session per week of at least 60 minutes, but more like 90 minutes to 120 minutes in zones one and zones two. And so that's typically somewhere between like 50% and 75% of your max heart rate. And that could be running, run, walk, rucking would be, or hiking, which would be the main things that I would recommend, because that way you're on your feet. And so that's going to obviously carry over more into hunting than getting on the Airdyne bike or something like that, which totally has its place. And you could do that if you don't have any other options, but spending a lot of time on your feet and getting out and moving. But getting at least like 2 hours total in that kind of heart rate zone would be great. And then maybe put a little bit of intensity on top of that with some HIIT type training and things like that to kind of train you for being able to go uphill. But if you haven't done much training up till now and you're thinking about your bear hunt, the biggest priority is going to be that zone one, zone two type training to kind of have your aerobic system ready to go.
Yeah.
6 weeks is you'll at least make some progress. It's obviously not ideal, but that would be the place to be. And then, you know, maintaining your strength training and your mobility training as well would be the biggest things. Now, if you've been training since the beginning of the year, like the folks with us have been, this is the time where you can start to, and as we're doing this week, as we start to change the program, add in more intensity. So we're going to be doing some stuff called cardiac power intervals, where you'll work like as hard as you can for a minute and then rest for four. We'll do that a handful of times and then put some zone two stuff on top of it. But now's the time where you can start to add in some intensity on top of all of your aerobic based training so that, you know, we've really focused on making sure that our heart pumps out as much blood as possible over the first part of this year. And that's really what we've been training for, and increasing the amount of mitochondria and things in our muscles, just to give you some really nerdy science stuff. And now we're going to focus on making our heart actually beat harder. And so that really maximizes how much blood we can send out, and also starts to train us to be able to handle uphills and stuff like that. So for bear hunters, I mean, I would love to tell you that, you know, just do some HIIT workouts, just do this, and that's what's going to prep you. But you don't really get to skirt the stuff that you need to do and not pay for it. Because let's say that you have a week-long bear hunt planned. Let's say, you know, even if you're staying at an Airbnb and you're hiking in every day, or whether you're camping, no matter what, if you don't continue to lay the aerobic foundation and you don't do some of that work now, your stamina throughout the week is going to tank hard on you. And so the biggest thing is you need to, it's like we used to say, when I would train a lot of athletes, a lot of football players and stuff like that, our summer conditioning wasn't necessarily for football. It was to survive football camp, because you were going to run and do way more work than you need to do to be able to play football, but we got to get through camp and not get hurt and be able to perform. And so a slight kind of analogy to what we need to do when we're going to go on these hunts is you need to be ready to go day to day. And so sure, like the hit stuff is going to help you get up the hill and it's going to be fun and it's going to feel good, but you can't skip the important work of going low and slow and getting your heart rate into that zone for as much time as you can. Honestly, there's really no upward limit other than time on getting into zones one and zones two for the most part. But we recommend at least 2 hours. If you can get four in, that would be ideal. And then one long session, like 90 minutes to 2 hours, if you can sort out that time.
Quick shout out to another amazing sponsor of ours, Kafaru International. If you're like us and love hunting in some of the toughest places, you know how crucial having the right gear is. Kafaru makes some of the toughest, most reliable backpacks and tents out there, and it's all made right here in America. Whether you're hunting in the backcountry or headed to your favorite deer stand, Kafaru has you covered. Keep your eyes out this year, especially as they're launching a ton of amazing new products like the new Arc frame that just came out. So next time you gear up for an adventure, make sure to check out Kafaru International.
Yeah, hunting is interesting because it's like you have many days on end of a lot of physical exertion, as opposed to like you got a football game on Friday night or something like that.
Sure.
You do it again and again. A lot of times maybe you're not sleeping as great. You know, you don't have the most optimal nutrition during that time often because you've got backpacking meals that just
exactly
are like eating wood chips. And so, yeah, it's like an interesting prep time.
Oh, know? Yeah. Yeah, and the biggest thing is, you know, your aerobic system is what's going to help you recover between all of those sessions, right? So that's why, you know, a lot of guys come to us and they say, you know, I felt good on day one, but by day three, I was totally wrecked. And it's because they did some kind of training that was just like very intense, short duration. Like maybe they'd go out, you know, I'd run really hard for a handful of miles every week, and I'd do that a few times. But it's like, well, that's... You're prepping for something that lasts 20 minutes instead of something that's going to last hours and then have to back up day to day. You know what I mean? Yeah. So you just can't skip that work. There's no way around it. I mean, even if, like I said, you got the uphills coming and all that, you still need to do the low and slow work now. And you'd be better benefited by doing that and staying consistent with it over the next handful of weeks than you would by just trying to jump into the deep end of the pool and murder yourself.
Well, yeah, it seems like there's there's a lot of programs in hunting and outside of hunting. It's like, all right, you got to just, you know, 30 minutes of hell. You got to, you know, if you don't sweat a bucket and, you know, your knees aren't shaken by the end of every single workout, you're not doing it right. And it seems like you guys push kind of against that.
Well, I mean, they're different adaptations. Like you need both, but you can't supplant your structural adaptations with the high intensity stuff. So the high intensity stuff is more metabolic. Right. So it's like, how do we utilize the nutrients that are and oxygen that are being delivered to our muscles? Whereas like the low and slow stuff builds your delivery and your recovery system. And so you need both. But the problem is we get biased so hard towards the hard stuff because we get an instant reward for it from it. It feels like we've done something and you reap adaptation from it really quickly. So you feel fitter really fast from it. But the problem is you plateau much faster if you don't have the other stuff laid down. And so it's easy to get biased towards it because it really feels like you're doing something. But we need both adaptations. We just need way more of the low and slow stuff because it builds the structural stuff that we were talking about, like making sure that your heart pumps out more blood, making sure that your vasculature, like your capillary density and stuff like that increases, the mitochondria for low intensity stuff that allows us to have endurance and recovery. And so if we don't do that work first, like we don't get as much out of our high intensity work.
Yeah, it is interesting. I have done programs like that in the past, and you're right, like you shoot up and you're feeling really good at first, and then you're like, man, I feel like I'm the exact same that I was, you know, a couple weeks ago. Like you do plateau pretty quick. So that's an interesting part to this.
Or you get crushed. I mean, I like let's say that you can manage three of those workouts in a week, but then like the next week you feel like hell. So you miss two workouts the next week, or even more, like, you know what, you don't even work out, and then you're way behind the curve, and it's incredibly difficult to manage consistency, which is going to be the biggest variable that gets you where you want to be. So, I mean, regardless of, you know, if you're just starting to train now, or if you've been training from the beginning of the year, you just don't get out of the training cycle. Like, you just can't get around doing the low and slow stuff and keeping it in your program all the time. Yeah. And I mean, even now, even as you're close to going on that hunt, you still got to do a lot of it.
Well, it is weird because it's like, you know, with the low and slow where you're, you know, zone one and two, you're, you know, for me, I think that's like, I forgot what my zone two heart rate. It's like 140s to 50s or something.
I would guess
like
it's probably like 140 to mid 150s, something yeah. like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, you're like, oh man, you know, you feel like you're doing a lot more when you're, you know, at 170 and you're like laying on the ground, but you know, it's equally important to just move consistently yeah. for a long time.
Yep. Yeah. That's really it. And it's just amazing if you do that, how much better you feel overall. And then when you go on a hunt and you just like, I can get up every day and I can go. And that's another thing, you know, you mentioned the mobility stuff and how flexible you feel. That's another stuff, a thing right now that if you're going on a bear hunt and you got hunts this spring, is really focus on, especially if you're backpacking in and you're going to be tenting and all of that and camping out. Because you're going to be sleeping on the ground, like you're going to be putting your body through harsh stuff. And the better your joints feel and the better their health going into that, the better they're going to respond to sleeping on the ground every day and doing all that kind of stuff. And, you know, another thing to keep in mind is when you're sitting there glassing or you're sitting around camp or eating lunch, like do a few mobility drills on your feet or like use your Z foam and do some stuff and keep your body feeling good. Because, I mean, you just be sitting there glassing anyway and you yeah. take a break, do a couple minutes of something, stretch out, sit back down in glass and take care of your body. Cause it's no different than, you know, if you're an office person sitting in a cubicle all day and just like you sit there and you get stiff. Well, I know we all kind of get obsessed with keeping our eyes on the glass and trying to find something, but you know, yeah. taking a minute to move your shoulders around, move your back around will pay big dividends over the course of the hunt and keep you in it a little bit more.
That's been, like I said, a huge thing for me. Like, just sore, you know, if I'm not stretching a lot, I'm sore, you know, I can't squat or like crouch down for a long time. If I'm stalking, like it actually has an impact. It's like,
oh, for sure.
You know, huge deal.
Big thanks to Vortex Optics for sponsoring this podcast as well. Most hunters know how important clear, reliable glass is in the woods. In fact, we don't hit the woods without some form of optics in our hands. Vortex Optics offers a wide range of high-quality binoculars and scopes and rangefinders, things that are perfect for hunting or bird watching or whatever you're doing outside. Their world-class products also come with an amazing warranty. I've actually used it, and it's really fast and easy to use. So whether you're spotting a big bear across a drainage or lining up that perfect shot, make sure you're doing it with Vortex Optics.
One other thing, you know, that I did have a question about was like, nutrition.
Sure.
And you know, I know that's a huge topic, but you know, what are like, if for folks that you talk to, like what are some of the things that you're seeing that they just kind of do wrong a lot, or they're not maybe missing when it comes to nutrition?
Honestly, the biggest problems with nutrition are psychology and environment, not necessarily the food, right? Because I think mostly, I mean, other than the confusing shit that you'll see all the time where it's like, you know, don't eat plants. Plants are bad for you. Don't eat meat. Yeah. Meat's bad for you. It's like if someone's talking about something that's extreme, they're usually full of shit. And so like you can kind of just disregard that. But the main thing is environment and setting up habits, right? So one of the simplest things people can do is like, well, I'll take a step back. Like we know we need to eat vegetables. We know we need to eat protein. We know we need to eat fats. We know we need to eat fruits. Like we know we need to eat these things. It is not a complicated thing, but the issue is having them in our way so it's easy to eat them and making it easy on yourself. Because it's, I think people want to rely on discipline and willpower and all these things, and then they judge themselves when they can't. But it's like, if you don't set up your environment for success, like that's when you start to fail and you don't have the things you need to do. So as I don't know, cliche or as simple as it might sound, like prepping your food so that you're just ready to eat well is like the best thing that you can do, and the big where people most people fail with their nutrition. So there's this guy BJ Fogg, who we all have to blame for us being addicted to Instagram. He was he's this guy, he researcher at Stanford, and his students created Instagram and like figured out how to make it addictive. But he has this book called Tiny Habits, and pretty much a lot of the behavior change stuff that you're going to read is based on his work. So like Atomic Habits, all that kind of stuff. And he has a concept called super fridge. And so as soon as you get home from the grocery store, instead of just throwing your vegetables in the fridge and leaving them there, and then I'll clean them and cut them up later, get everything ready. Just wash your vegetables, chop them up into the portions that you would need, and have your fridge ready to go. Have your proteins in portions. And like, that's one of the best things I think about processing your own meat, because you know how your family eats, and you can put it into the packages that you need to make sure that you're eating in the way that you need to. So I think the biggest thing is environment. Like if you know that if you have ice cream sandwiches in the house, you're going to eat 16 of them a week. Well, you got to keep them out of the house, and not saying that you shouldn't eat those things, because I love an ice cream sandwich, but like understanding how you work and what you need to do to set yourself up for success. And I think that is the place where people miss the most. And then from there, it's just like trying to make it too complicated depending on your skill set. So for example, you know, we have different levels of nutrition clients at our gym. So like there's like level one that are working on very basic things like that, maybe drinking enough water. Level two, and we start talking about things like hand portions, where I think a lot of people are too. So eating based on measuring out your food based on using your hands. So like, for example, dudes should eat about 2 palms worth of protein at a meal. Yeah, about 2 palms worth of protein. They should have 2 cupped handfuls of carbohydrates, something like that. They should have 2 thumbs worth of fat, and then 2 fistfuls of veggies. And like that's what a meal that's about what a meal should be composed of for guys.
Like flat? Then,
what do you mean?
Like, you know, when you say like 2 palms of protein, like
just look at your palms. Yeah, take your fingers out of it. And that should be about your protein portion. So that's going to give you, for most protein sources, somewhere around 40, maybe 50 grams. Now, but eggs are different, obviously. And you know that, like, you could scramble your eggs and they could fill up your palms like that. And that's not 40 grams of protein. But, you know, but for chicken, for beef, for things like that, you know, for deer meat, that's going to work pretty well. And then for women, you just cut it in half. And then I think that that's where a lot of people can live and just manage that for pretty much the rest of their lives. And then also understand their actual hunger cues. So what's the difference between being hungry and being bored, and understanding how your environment might be affecting you? So if you learn how to manage those things and those skills, like have your environment set up, eat based on those kind of proportions, understand when you're actually hungry and when you're not. So like, for example, if you start to feel hungry, sit there for 10, 15 minutes. If you're still hungry, you're probably hungry. If not, it was probably some kind of environmental thing that's telling you that you're hungry or you're bored or something like that. And so, but if you're still hungry, eat. And then, you know, if you eat and then in about 3.5 to 4 hours later, you really feel like you need to eat again, your meal size was about where it should have been, you know?
Interesting.
And so just using skills like that will do a ton for you. Set up your environment, use the hand portions, understand when you're hungry, and then gauge your meal size based on hunger down the road. So like if you eat and then you're not hungry again for like 5 or 6 hours, you ate way too much. Or if you ate and then you're hungry again in an hour and a half, you didn't eat enough. And so just kind of balancing those kind of things out will make a huge difference in your nutrition, but it really starts with environment.
Interesting. Well, we talk about this. I've got a 11-year-old daughter, and my wife and I will, like, at night sometimes when she's up late, she gets hungry. Mm-hmm. Like at late, and we're like, I think that's just because you're tired and you're trying to figure out how to grab a little extra energy.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I think a lot of people do that.
For sure. That's like one of the first things that's going to make you consume more calories is a short sleep. Like getting shitty sleep will make you eat more. We know that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's insane. So, well, you know, you're sharing a lot of kind of helpful information, you know, online. And so, you know, just to wrap this up for people who are looking to just, you know, figure out more about this type of thing, maybe want to check out a program or just want to like
get, like I said, these pretty good bits of information that you share. Where can they find that?
Yeah, so website is humanpredatorpackmule.com. That's all one word. And then Instagram at humanpredatorpackmule. And you go to those two places, you'll be able to see what we're about. You'll be able to find information and you'll be able to reach out to us.
Awesome. Well, hey, Todd, thanks for taking the time here to jump on and share some stuff for bear season. And, you know, this will apply for the fall and everything too. So we'll have you back on. But yeah, thanks and appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
All right.